This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The Pulitzer Prize is famous for awarding great talent in journalism, fiction, and drama. Less well known is the Pulitzer Prize in music. Some say the reason is the rule. By definition, the prize is awarded to a distinguished musical composition of significant dimension by an American that has had its first performance in the United States during the year. This has generally meant a classical piece, well-respected among academics, but little understood by everybody else. Yesterday, the Pulitzer Board announced it was expanding its criteria for the Music Prize, starting in 2004. Among the changes, entrants no longer must submit a score of their work, a recording will be accepted, and the 5-member jury picking the winners will now include a performer or presenter along with composers and one critic. The goal is a wider range of applicants, more from the fields of jazz improvisation, musical theater, and movie music. This may make the Pulitzers more relevant to modern musicians, but what about the work of the past? For the rest of this hour, we'll deal with the coulda, woulda, shoulda of the Pulitzer Prize in Music, and we're taking your nominations. What are your pick for the Pulitzers of the past? Do you think the John Williams score to Superman was the best composition of 1978? How about Miles Davis' Kind of Blue for 1959? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A to talk about how the new Pulitzer rules might have affected the past is A.B. Spellman, Deputy Chairman for Guidelines and Panel Operations for the National Endowment for the Arts, and most recently the author of Four Jazz Lives. Thanks very much for coming in.
My pleasure, Neil.
And also with us is Murray Horwitz. He's the director and COO of American Film Institute's Silver Theater in Silver Spring, Maryland. Also the former vice president of culture programming here at NPR, the originator and co-author of the Broadway hit Ain't Misbehavin'. And he joins us on the phone from his home in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Murray, good to talk to you.
Hello. How are you doing, Neil?
Very good. A.B. Spellman, did you see this change coming, by the way?
No, I didn't. It's long overdue, but I wasn't expecting it this year.
And is this likely to be well-received among jazz musicians?
Well, jazz musicians are famous complainers, so it will be received somewhat favorably, but I think that there may be some worries that jazz won't be annually included in the awards.
One name that's been frequently mentioned as somebody who deserved a Pulitzer Prize is Duke Ellington. He, of course, was given a posthumous special citation in 1999 in honor of the centennial of his birth. What are some of the compositions that might have won while he was alive?
Oh, there would be dozens. Certainly the earlier suites, Black, Brown, and Beige, and works of that nature. A lot of any compilation of the smaller tunes, even back into the 1920s, Harlem Airshaft and all of those brief little bits. Certainly some of the longer works would have qualified easily. The Far East Suite is a magnificent piece of writing, the one he did along with Billy Strayhorn on the works of Duke Ellington. I meant Midsummer Night's Dream.
Right.
These are all wonderful American compositions, and there are dozens of them that would be worthy of national recognition and an award.
Mm. Murray Horwitz, I'll ask you the same question I just put to A.B. Spellman. Did you see this coming?
Yes and no, Neil, because it's important to remember that there's already been at least one jazz Pulitzer, and that was for Wynton Marsalis's Blood on the Fields in 1997. When I say yes and no, I mean, I remember that there was a controversy at the time, and maybe some credit should go to a writer for the Wall Street Journal, Greg Sandow, who used to write for the Village Voice as well, because he wrote an article saying, you know, it's great that now a jazz composer has been included, but nobody knew about this change. And there are probably a lot of other jazz composers and composers of popular music who would have liked to have been nominated or put themselves in for nomination, which you can do in the Pulitzers, but they didn't get the chance. Next time they change the rules, they should let somebody know. And so that, I think, is what they did this time.
Well, I've read some artists express concern today that this is watering down the award. What's your reaction?
Well, I think it's not necessarily, but possibly. I haven't seen, it's interesting, if you go to the Pulitzer website, you don't see any new definition of what the music award is. You see the definition that you read. And but if it's as inclusive as it seems to be, well, you know, you could have rap artists, you could have popular music artists. I would think that they're still after something, to use their phrase, something of significant dimension. But, you know, I mean, on the sort of right-wing side of things, one can say that this is a symptom of the dumbing down of America. On the other hand, it's absolutely unconscionable that Duke Ellington never received the Pulitzer Prize. He had a great quote, by the way, or I'm told it's a quote of his. AB can confirm or deny, but when he was nominated for a special award in 1965 and the Pulitzer Board turned it down, they asked Duke about it, and he said, I took the amount of energy it would take in me to pout, and I composed the blues instead.
Well, I've got to disagree with my good friend Murray Horowitz and say that I see no possibility that there'll be any watering down. I have to ask, watering down from what? The fact of the matter is that the traditional seven lively arts, which groups like the Pulitzer and others have operated on for much of the 20th century, no longer hold as the standards of what is great in creativity in American life. I mean, you look at a music like jazz, for example, that started completely outside of that universe of what was called serious culture and actually was certified not by Americans but by Europeans as being great art music. I mean, it was the French who wrote the first serious criticism about jazz, not American writers. It was the British who first certified Duke Ellington as being a composer who was worthy of comparison to such as Delius, say. So I don't see that as possible, largely because I can't imagine that the Pulitzer in putting together its juries will be less than elitist.
Well, you know, that's a great point. Actually, I don't know that we disagree, but we may differ about it, because I think that AB's put his finger right on it. It's an award, after all, and a prize, and the Pulitzer is nothing if not elitist. I remember Jules Pfeiffer for years was declared ineligible for the Political Cartooning Award because, you know, he didn't write editorial page cartoons that ran on the, you know, second to last page of the first section. He ran strips in the Village Voice. I mean, it's preposterous. He was one of the great, and is one of the great political cartoonists of all time. So it's always going to be an elitist thing, the Pulitzer Prize, and that may be not bad. So maybe he's right about that.
I would also ask the question, is there any tribe in human society anywhere in the world that is more territorial than academics?
maybe people who produce musicals. Murray, let me ask you about that. Musicals used to be able, or previously been eligible for the prize in drama. What's different about including them now in a music category?
Well, in that, first of all, the award in music at least, has tended to be a kind of life achievement award. The best piece doesn't always win, but usually in the field of serious music, if you look at the prize over the years, there's some glaring omissions, I would argue, like Leonard Bernstein, but mostly most of the big heavy hitters in American classical music eventually get the award as a kind of good housekeeping seal. Well, the same thing could be true in the musical theater. Somebody who has a distinguished record, you know, for example, Cole Porter never won the award, whereas Frank Lesser did. And Frank Lesser didn't even win for Guys and Dolls. He won for How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. So that's one reason why making composers of musical theater eligible, and one assumes, although full disclosure, as a lyricist, I have to say, I'm arguing a special pleading here, lyricists as well, because they write the songs too. The other reason is, you know, if you look at the award that was given to Of Thee I Sing in 1932, which was the first musical to win in the drama category, George Gershwin's name is not there. Ira Gershwin's name is there, and Maury Riskin's and George S. Kaufman, but George Gershwin is not a winner. He wrote the music.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And our first caller is Todd, who's with us from Akron, Ohio.
Good afternoon. How are you gentlemen doing?
Good, Todd. How are you doing?
I'm great.
I'm fantastic. Really had three albums or three composers which ought to have gotten a Pulitzer. Of course, you would have all had to done it in the same year. And those, of course, would have been John Coltrane for Giant Steps, along with Miles Davis for the Kind of Blue album, and the Dave Brubeck Quartet. I guess it would have been Dave Brubeck and perhaps even Paul Desmond, since they.
Yeah, that would have been Take Five, right?
Well, yeah. Well, Take Five would have been Paul Desmond, and then many of the other compositions were all Brubeck. But as a group, the quartet really just kind of blew open the entire way that jazz was perceived, or modern music in general, just by introducing all those different time signatures.
A.B. Spellman, that would have been a pretty tough year for the panel.
Indeed it would, but I think that it would not be so much a problem actually in the long run, because all of those musicians produce other work that could have qualified in other years. In other words, if you had a cluster of great recordings in that particular year, you could always go to another. John Coltrane had probably... now that they're considering great improvisation as something which can be considered,
mm-hmm.
John Coltrane probably had a dozen, 10 or so LPs that are major American classics of music. Miles Davis would have even more. So I think you would have to have, you wouldn't necessarily get everybody's most noted work in any particular year. It's also interesting that we're talking about LPs as compositions. I think that's a fabulous thing to consider here, because that is something that technology changed, which is to say that the LP became akin to the suite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
which
that,
was when it was all on 78.
Yes, exactly. So, so that you could get musicians who develop ideas and themes and moods and lay them out in, say, six separate pieces, which do comprise a terrific suite.
We're talking with A.B. Spellman and Murray Horowitz about new categories in the definition of the Pulitzer Prize for Music. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email we got sort of on this subject from Charles Warner. Will recorded improvisation be included for consideration? I think the answer to that is yes. On-the-fly improvisation is not composition, is much closer to discovery. He suggests maybe it should be a Nobel Prize category.
Well, I don't know. You get into definitions here. I think that the very best of the improvisers are great composers. It's a sort of composition in the act of.
Right.
Great improvisation without structure, it's ultimately boring.
And not only that, it's AB's of course 100% right about that, but it's called the Pulitzer Prize in Music. It's not really the Pulitzer Prize in Music Composition, which means, I mean, arguably the single most important American musician of the 20th century was Louis Armstrong. Louis Armstrong composed almost nothing, to my knowledge, but he sure did every time he sang or every time he picked up his horn and put his lips to it. So it's as AB says, you get into definitions of what's what, and then that it opens up whole genre questions. There are extraordinarily influential musicians like the father of bluegrass, Bill Monroe, or Thomas A. Dorsey, who is the greatest composer of gospel music in the African American tradition. I mean, would they be eligible today? And from what's in the newspapers, it sounds like they would.
Let's get another caller in. Sam is with us from San Antonio, Texas.
Hi,
you're on the air, Sam.
I was just calling because I think that Prince should have won for his soundtrack to Purple Rain.
Film score, that's another addition there.
Well, I happen to absolutely love the soundtrack to Purple Rain, and I agree with you. It's that, I would argue, is a little bit more in the way of a musical film score, like the score to The Wizard of Oz, which, you know, had there been a prize back then in 39, should in my view have been eligible. It's almost like the score for a musical. When it comes to film composition, though, I'm glad that that was brought up, because some of the greatest composers working in any and every genre, even today, like you mentioned John Williams, Neil, mm-hmm. and Jerry Goldsmith, the great Bernard Herrmann, even some guys who I think were naturalized American citizens like Max Steiner and Eric Wolfgang Korngold, these are people who, if you want to know what the sound of America is, they had much bigger ears, as the jazz musicians say, than a lot of academic composers, and their orchestrations reflect the sound of America. People who would never listen to jazz or would never listen to atonal music will go into a movie theater and listen to a score that comprises all of that and more besides.
Sam, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
I think it does raise an interesting question, which has to do with just the general question of excellence, and what is the general question of genius and of cultural influence and impact and quality, and is that limited to the world of so-called serious music? Prince is a musician who obviously is very musically ambitious, and that's something we certainly can respect and honor him for. He is put into the popular world. Once there, he is sort of sort of limited in what he can aspire to in terms of recognition for greatness. But I think Stevie Wonder, on top of his game, is a major American musician, and I don't see how you go about not recognizing him as such.
Stevie Wonder, and of course you could go on and, well, let me make a personal nominee as well. It would have to be a posthumous award, and that would be to Frank Zappa.
Yes.
A.B. Spellman, thanks very much for coming in. A.B. Spellman, Deputy Chairman for Guidelines and Panel Operations at the National Endowment for the Arts, and Murray Horwitz of the Silver Theater. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.